Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Today I want to talk about a subtle and important topic, important to me anyway, Zen ethics. Zen and the art of ethics. And I hope I don't get interrupted by the kids pouring in, but if I do, then just know that it's a very subtle thing, and I only got halfway through it, so I'll have to finish later. I want to become a better person. I want to mature more fully, just as a human being in my life. I've only got this one shot that I know of. And I want to do my best with it. And become a kinder and wiser and less disappointing person. And I have a little ways to go. You know, there are emails that I should have answered already. Probably should have answered a week ago that are sitting in my inbox. There are things that I promised I'd do that I have not done. There are times when I am sharper than I need to be with my wife or with my kids. I think that this practice of Zen can help me with that. I believe that. But the way that it helps is interesting to me. Because our basic practice is not to say, be good to your kids. Be more responsible. It's not that that isn't part of the practice of our seeing, but it's not the basic practice. The basic primary practice is to become good, to become better. We have to lose good and bad altogether. To become better, we have to lose better and worse. Lose any thought of better and worse. That's the way that we get better. So it is not a direct line. We don't take the direct approach. We take a very indirect approach. And I mean very indirect. Because, like, losing any sense of good and bad is a very strange way to become good. It feels strange. It's counterintuitive. So I think that we have to get past a certain kind of almost gag reflex that we have to get past in order to do the Zen work, which I believe will help us in some way treat our kids a little bit better. But in order to do that, we have to give up thinking about our kids, give up all those responsibilities that we have, all those emails that we could spend our time doing that on the cushion. I have done that. You know, composing emails, working things out. But I believe, and I want to encourage you to believe as well, that actually the best use of my time is to drop all of that, is to drop everything, getting better in any way. And only when we can drop getting better in any way can we start to mature in a different way. And grow in a different way. You may not think that you're giving up good and evil when you're sitting. You may not think about good and evil much when you're sitting. You're just meditating, you know, you're just breathing. But in our tradition, it's pointed out somewhat radically that that is what we're doing. There's other ways to look at it, to be sure, many ways to look at meditation, but this is one way to look at it that's important to look at, that you're giving up good and evil. You're giving up your ideas of good and bad. So just one example of that is in the 23rd chapter of the Moving Tao, a very famous collection of koans. There's this kid, Huinen, Ino in Japanese, and he somehow got given in the monastery, got given, even though he was new and he was illiterate, he got given the robe and the bowl. That is to say, he got given the, he became the successor, without going into all the details. And the heir apparent was none too happy about this, and nor were the rest of the monks. So the fifth ancestor told Huinen, who's the sixth ancestor, says, you better go. Just go somewhere. Because I don't think they're going to let you off lightly. So he runs. And then, according to the story, Hongren, who's also known as Myo, Hongren followed him. And finally, there's this chase that ensues, and he finally catches him. And Huinen says, he just puts his robe and his bowl down on a rock and says, this represents the Zen way, the Zen faith. And we shouldn't fight over it. So he just puts it on. And then Hongren tries to pick it up, grab it and go. And it's so heavy. It's so heavy. He can't pick it up. So he's shocked. And he says, he's kind of trembling, and he says, I came for the Dharma, not for the rope. Okay, I really came for the Dharma. I didn't come for the rope. So can you please teach me something? He kind of has a conversion. And then Huinen says, think neither good nor evil. At that moment, what is your original self? The original self of Hongren. So that's the way he puts it to him. When we give up our idea of good and bad, of good and evil, according to this story and according to Zen, there is an original self that appears. An original self that's before ideas, before thinking, before ideas of better or worse, good and bad, good and evil. For me, it's like we go back in a way to the Garden of Eden. Before Adam and Eve took that bite of the apple of the tree of good, the knowledge of good and evil. So it's before the knowledge of good and evil. In Christianity, it's hard to get back there, or it's impossible. It's like a one-way street. But here we can go back to that garden where they're before our ideas. So one way to see it is just to give up this addiction we have to thinking. But another way to think about it and to experience it, I think, is to give up intentionally, and you might want to try this sometime in meditation, to give up intentionally thinking about better or worse. Thinking about good things or bad things, and notice those good and bad. And give some intention to just dropping it and see what happens. The Buddha put it this way, in order to give up this addiction. He said, he encouraged people to give up attraction and aversion. So being attracted to things and being averse to them. Just give that, that's more subtle than good or bad, but it's where it starts. It's, I want this, I don't want that. I want the bird chirping. I don't want the motorcycle. And in Zen school, we just sit up straight without leaning toward the bird or away from the motorcycle. We're just going to be here. We're committed to whatever happens, just being with that. And we make it kind of simple. We do it in a pretty nice place. You know, we don't do it in the middle of a war zone. So it's just the simply getting used to that feeling and giving up. And really that means giving up your desire. And that's another way to think about meditation that I often think about. So one thing is to give up thinking, but another is to give up desiring things. It's just temporary, but try it sometime. Don't desire anything. See if you can do that. So today we have motorcycles. Yesterday we had a day sit. Just as we were getting all feeling good, last sit there was a compressor that went off. You know, was that a compressor? I don't know. Whatever it was a very loud machine over there. I mean, people have to get work done sometime. Saturday's a good day for it. But you know, then our job is just to do compressor meditation, to do motorcycle meditation, and to just let that motorcycle drive right over you, right through you. Let it into your body. That's the way I think about it, those sound meditations, whether it's a chainsaw or whatever. To let that fill you up so that you're not leaning away from it. And then it doesn't have the same power over you to knock you over. And I realize that that compressor or that motorcycle is not bad in the knee-jerk way that I notice that knee-jerk reaction. Oh, motorcycle bad, stop, compressor, whatever. And I can have a different relationship with it. And I think that knee-jerk reaction is kind of lazy. And that we have to question it in our lives. And when we come back to when we do this over and over again, I think it's possible to see that good things, what's good and bad, is more nuanced than we normally apprehend. That's the point, really, I want to make about that. It's not that we abandon good and bad forever. We don't do that in this school. It's just we temporarily do that so that we can see it in a different light and ask some questions about it. If I go home right after this, and I don't know, I can't think that I have to compose anything. I do have to make a blog post coming up soon. So let's say I was writing a blog post and these motorcycles are whizzing by, or I'm composing something in my... this compressor goes off. There's a chance I don't have to go sit right next to that compressor and make it my best friend while I'm composing. But I think there is I don't have to hate it either. I don't have to automatically hate it. And that changes the way a little part of my day. It changes the way I react if my daughter comes to me, bored. You know, now I got to deal with a bored daughter and a compressor. It just changes subtly my reaction to things, to other things as well, to other irritants. And those small effects really do add up, I believe, in a life. Add up to working with people more, with more kindness, more and more openness. Whether it's a compressor or a slightly difficult person that comes by. Thich Nhat Hanh says in this book, The Heart of Understanding, his commentary, very slim volume on the Heart Sutra. He has a very nice thing about good and bad in here. He says we have to not be simple-minded about it. I'm just going to read you a little bit. He says, we are imprisoned by our ideas of good and bad. Good and evil. We want to be only good, and we want to remove all evil. But this is because we forget that good is made of non-good elements. Suppose I'm holding a lovely branch. When we look at it with a non-discriminating mind, we see it's just a branch, wonderful branch. But as soon as we distinguish that one end is the left and the other end is the right, we get in trouble. We may say that we want only the left and we don't want the right, he says, as you hear very often. And there's trouble right away. If the leftist is not there, if the rightist is not there, how can you be a leftist? Let's say that I do not want the right end of the branch, I only want the left, so I break off half of this reality and throw it away. But as soon as I throw the unwanted half away, the end that remains becomes the right, the new right. Because as soon as the left is there, the right also has to be there. I may become frustrated and do it again. I break what remains of the branch in half, and still I have a right end there. I just thought I'd read that bit because I like that visual. You know, we can think that the answer is just to keep breaking that branch. And then we're just surprised. Oh, yeah, no, I don't like this right end anymore. There's another way to approach it, I think, which is not so simple. I think it's a way, it takes training for us to not take it, to do it, to kind of do this. In what I think of as a lazy way, a kind of simple way. And, you know, we, rather than thinking that the answer is to break, it may be that the answer is to see the whole stick and to realize, to kind of embrace that as our life and then make a decision about it. And it might be that we take off part of the stick. But if we break off part of that stick, let's not think that solves everything. Maybe with a family member, you know. Maybe the end point is to break off or to take some distance. But let's not think that by throwing that away, that solves the situation. I think it's simple-minded thinking that I often have, that to get rid of somebody or to get rid of even some aspect of ourselves, that we should just try to banish it or throw it away in the garbage. And it's not that simple, I don't think. Really is a more effective way to notice it as part of ourselves and then work with it differently. And this practice, I think, can really help that. Look at that, they're coming already. Okay, well, I won't tell you the story about Mara and the Buddha, very good story, but I'll have to save it for later. I will say this, that, so this is our basic practice is to let go of everything. But then we have to come back to it. We come back to good and bad, to our lives. And if you get stuck in that good, no bad, that's also a big mistake. All teachers make mistakes that way. They make ethical mistakes that way. You know, the Japanese government used that language during World War II to get into line. No good, no bad. We have to come back to the world of good and bad. But when we come back to the world of good and bad, we have to see it in a more nuanced way so that we're not always breaking off branches. That we see it as a more as part of a whole. and then make wiser decisions, that we're not always running away from what we perceive as bad. I think when we come back to the world, it helps to have that perspective, that deep perspective. But I think also what helps when we come back to the world to build, really, is a framework and a network of good relations with other people. And I hope the center is that in the world, is a network of healthy relations and that's not a simple thing to set up, I don't feel. I've been in unhealthy networks, and to build some, so I don't think of that as a simple matter. But I think together we're on the way, actually, with this group, to building something that's healthy, that can, in which we can together make a kind of a shared set of values that work. And I think we in the Zen school and the Buddhist school can take from our own tradition, from the Buddhist tradition, but we should also be flexible. We've learned a lot from the Christian tradition at this center, from the Unitarians about how to do governance. These things are important. To be able to learn from other ways is also important, I think. And because the Zen school, and the last thing I want to say is that the Zen school is about more than just giving up good and bad and then coming back. When we come back to, there are values, common Buddhist values, for us all to remember. That's why we have these statues, you know, around. So we remember the value of compassion, the value of doing unto somebody else as they would have, do unto others as they would have you do. As you would have you. You see how ethically mixed up I am. But that's the to remember the values of things like that. And that is honestly one of the reasons that I think it's great to have a children's program, is that we have three sections: wisdom, which is roughly speaking meditation and Eightfold Path, values, and compassion. And I think it's quite helpful to raise kids in with a kind of framework like that, so the only framework they get isn't just the school framework, but they also have this other framework that they can use for the rest of their lives. Okay, I think that's it. Thanks.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.